This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedure Subteam Track 1 Overall Process Support and Outreach Issue Call held on the 29th of November, 2016. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room only. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to, Sarah, but it looks like her Wi-Fi at the hotel is true and disconnected. So, Krista, I'll go ahead and turn it back over to you until we can get Sarah connected.
Thanks. Welcome, everyone, to Work Track 1. I will do a quick begin here. Usually, Sarah's so diligent in getting us started. Our agenda today is a statement of interest, and if anyone has anything to change or to provide an update on. I'll give a minute for anyone to state any changes. Okay, with no comments being said there, go into item number 3, which is the ICANN recap. Pretty much, we did our teaser questions for everyone. We got some really good feedback. Additionally, we met with some other people there who provided us with some other insight, which we'll share today. And additionally, we've kind of, you'll see in a moment, we've taken the topic number 1 and we've put it to the back burner for right now until we get some more insight and to be able to pull everything together. And then on the flip side, we are going to move forward with the timeline and add some new agenda items to it, which you'll see here in the in today's call. So going into item number 4, which is, I think there's a little bit of an error here on this, but item number, the first topic for discussion is the applicant support. And Sarah's back, so I'll let her present, or I'll leave this one for you, Sarah.
Yes, thank you. Sorry about that. I have horrible internet connection here. So it looks like you went through the agenda. Is that correct, Krista?
Yep.
Okay, great.
So right now I'm on applicant support on the slide number 3.
Okay, great. Yes, so when we were in Hyderabad, we had some productive conversations with members of the GAC, Alice from the GAC, as well as APAC. And so these are just some of the items and information that we received during the meeting for us to take into consideration. As you can see here, the main item was that we need to fully understand why the applicant support program failed before moving forward any further. And based off our conversation with Alice from the GAC, cost was definitely a big factor. And she also told us that it was likely that the GAC would oppose any efforts to move forward without first understanding the challenges that were met and why it failed. Both the GAC and APAC, I think, are looking to reach out to the applicants who did apply for the applicant support to find out what went wrong from them. And the GAC is going to be putting forward a plan with a new approach to understand these challenges and be able to enforce those challenges with data. So they're looking to review and understand the weaknesses of the programs over the next few years. Alice did express, I think, some frustration over having Western or North American companies come into the region to do studies regarding the problems, and she felt that it, in a way, undermined any sort of potential program that they made, that North American companies didn't fully understand some of the problems and the challenges that that particular region may be facing. And she would like to see someone who understands the region better lead a review. So they're looking to have balanced outreach and impartial information so that they can have the right level of expectation and making people aware. They also, when we were, I believe when we were speaking with AIPAC, they expressed interest in having ICANN partner with organizations that are in those regions. Pardon me. That would be more helpful and beneficial. And some potential areas that we could also look at and consider for applicant support would be to expand type of support that's being given, so broaden it to support IDNs or other criteria, and also during our discussions with AIPAC group, they expressed the need to have applicant support for the middle applicant that developed but struggling regions as opposed to underserved or developed regions. And so those are some of the takeaways that we had from ICANN 57 regarding applicant support. I think it was insightful to get other feedback and sort of more up close and personal for people that are in those regions and some of their frustrations and what they're looking at for future support. And I know Aubrey had mentioned that Marik might join. I don't know that I see him on the call. I think he was going to try to provide us a little bit of flavor as well. So I will stop here to see if there are any comments. I see, Alan, you have your hand up, so please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Just a quick comment. To the extent that these kind of slides will be useful going forward, we need clarity, I think, on a few things. For instance, on the first bullet, on the first section, it says cost was a big factor. Now, I suspect that is the cost of the application fee, the cost of the application process, and the ongoing costs of running a registry are all applicable. But I worry that someone will look at that and say, oh, it's $185,000, that was the issue. And that may or may not have been the case. So we need to make sure as we go forward that when we do write things down, I mean, the lead-in of that sentence is we need some facts or we need information. But to the extent that we start answering the questions, we do need clarity to make sure that people will understand what it is we're writing. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Alan, for that input. And yes, my apologies, a newbie error on my part, and I will make an effort to be more specific with anything I write in the future. Jeff, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. One other thing I just wanted to draw people's attention to. During the ICANN 57, Jorge sent a document around to the entire working group. So while it wasn't specifically to this track, it was sent to the working group on work done on community-based applications. And I know that we're not necessarily talking about communities here, but the reason I bring it up is because on your third bullet under next steps, where it says need balance between outreach and information being impartial, I do want to point out that this study seems to also make the recommendation that ICANN does need to do more outreach than it did, and it can still do more outreach and still appear to be impartial. So ICANN took an extremely conservative approach during this last round, and I think one of the recommendations in that report is that ICANN should go further in its outreach, and even if it does go further, it won't it won't ruin ICANN's impartiality. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Before we move on, Krista, did you have anything further that you would like to add regarding the applicant support?
Not really. I think you kind of really captured all the conversations that we had, and I think one of the key aspects was, you know, going forward, what does it look like? And we'll see on the next slide kind of capturing what that looks like based on some of the feedback. So I see we have it up. One of the key ideas, which I thought was really perfect, was from Alice in the suggestion that if we do applicant support, there has to be the right balance between what the communities or the geographic areas or whatever it might be, what they want in terms of, say, an applicant support for that GTLD, and balancing it with, do they have enough potential, say, registrants who would be interested in that GTLD, or do they have bigger issues to address, i.e., you know, do we need the users long before we need the GTLD, or are we trying to build the GTLD and then bringing in the users? So I think that was one of the key items there, and I called it the cart before the horse. So, and to move forward in, I guess, the applicant support discussion is, how do we determine what that looks like, and how do we balance that out? So, and one of the other aspects, of course, was the cost. We, the applicant support program, was looking at the application fee for $185,000, as opposed to what are the ongoing costs, and that wasn't explained clearly enough to the applicants and how they would pay for that going forward. So, you know, if there is a logical case going forward, what does it look like? And we need to consider that in our feedback and, I guess, our discussions going forward.
Great. Thank you, Krista. I'm just looking in the chat here to see if we have any comments.
There's one. Steve mentioned that there's a link to the study that Jeff mentioned, and there's also another one for the wiki under 4.4.5 community applications. And I think I missed some of those beforehand. My apologies.
Sorry about that. I keep dropping.
I was just going through some of the discussions. You didn't miss anything. So some of the comments. Donna, there's no market for domain names or infrastructure or resources to support a TLD. Then providing a financial support to apply for a TLD may not necessarily solve the problem. Agree. Jim, I think the ongoing cost issue is important. $185,000 is just the beginning. And Donna, agreeing with Jim. So, would anyone like to add any comments or suggestions or insight or any ideas for future discussions on applicant support and how we might solve the issue of balancing the different perspectives out? Alan, I see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. It's Alan Greenberg. One of the largest things that we fought with in the applicant support group was the balancing of making the program successful versus opportunities for gaming. And in retrospect, we probably came out far too strong on the anti-gaming side than on making the program useful. And I think that's something we're going to have to talk about. There is going to be a balance, and by setting the bar so high to prevent gaming, we also probably eliminated some of the potential applicants. And I think that's going to have to be one of the real discussions that we have. Are we willing to take the risk that people will play games with us and get unfair advantage versus not having anyone use the program at all again? So I think that has to be one of the topics that we look at. Thank you.
Thanks, Alton. I think you raise a really great point, and I'm not sure if we want to get into that now or if we want to kind of create a document where we can share some of the ideas and then discuss beforehand, but I think it's a really good point. And then how do we evaluate what that is going forward to prevent gaming? So, and I know it is that some of them are for not-for-profits, but then how do we evaluate that? And really, I think in the big scheme of thing, $185,000 isn't the cost savings. It's how are they going to pay for it going forward, and how are they going to support it so, you know, it's a benefit to everyone and, you know, it meets its expectations, I guess. Does anyone else have any suggestions or items that they think we should consider in that balancing of the risk versus implementing such a program? Sorry, Donna makes a comment. Alan, when you say not the program, again, do you mean the applicant support program or the TLD program? Are you referring to the applicant support?
Applicant support program, definitely.
Okay, thank you.
We did the same thing in various parts of the overall program, community TLDs, for instance, but I was referring to the applicant support and the bars that we set for financial and other types of requirements. Thank you.
And then Aubrey says, we need to be clear that accusations of possible gaming do not become in themselves a form of gaming. <That's what she> says. Donna, I see you have your hand raised. Alan, is that an old hand?
Sorry, that is an old hand.
Okay, thanks. Donna, please go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. Donna Austin. Excuse my ignorance with the history of, you know, why the applicant support was developed in the first place, but I just wonder, was there a sense that there were specific TLDs that folks would be or groups would be applying for that was part of the, you know, the thinking around this, or was it more based in not having the financial ability to apply for a TLD in the first place? And one of the reasons I ask the question is that if you have a community group or a regional location group and they think that, you know, a TLD would be helpful in terms of getting out the community word or assisting in the business that they do, there are other possible ways for those groups to get funding to support an ongoing project for something like this, you know, in terms of there could be government grants or something like that available. So it may be that perhaps applicant support is more around the application will be different in that there would be a business case for how you would support the TLD on an ongoing basis if you could get the original or assistance with the application fee, noting that the application fee is one cost, but the actual development of the application and the rest of it is going to be an additional cost as well. So I guess my ignorance on the original intent of the program, but perhaps that might, if And if that information is available somewhere, then maybe I need to go and read it. But it was just, a question about, was it a specific TLD we were trying to address, or is it more for a community, or is it more about financial support to boost somebody's ability to get a TLD in a region that may not necessarily have the resources available? Thanks.
Thanks, Donna. I believe it was more from developing countries, but perhaps Aubrey can provide some insight as she has her hand up. Please go ahead, Aubrey.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Aubrey speaking. First of all, I do think that the JAS report that came out at the time is probably worth reading, especially in terms of setting a basis for it. It wasn't about any specific TLD, though there was indeed the maybe it was a hope is not quite the right word, that IDNs and such would be valuable. There was also a comment from the GAC at the time that for developing economies, the fees needed to be low, in fact, as low as free, which, of course, was not a recommendation that got too far. There was basically also a strong consideration that, and this sort of comes from the policy of the one size doesn't fit all, and yet, in a sense, we ended up with an AGB that was indeed one size, that the financial constraints, the costs of doing things, the amount of available funding and such was very different in a developing economy than it was in L.A. Or any of the northern. I mean, prices were vastly different. There was also a component that wasn't just financial, but there was a component that developed quite nicely, but it developed kind of out of time with the financial aid for offering other kinds of services, other kinds of help. And of course, this was before we had the whole notion of RSPs that were somehow separate and unavailable. So at that point, they were also dealing with how they had to satisfy those needs, and that was very rudimentary at the time. So there were many elements. Price wasn't one of them. It wasn't specific TLDs, but there was a hope that it would be IDNs. There was a strong push for developing economy finances to be taken into account and such. So those were very much the impetuses. There were probably others, but those are the ones that come to my mind at present. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. Alan, I see you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I've recovered much of what I was going to say. I think it's important as we look backwards to, yes, we should, you know, people should read the report and look at what the documentation was. But remember, this was done very, very late, much later than it should have for a whole bunch of reasons we won't go into right now. It was felt by some people in the community that it was really misdirected, but it was the only thing we could do at that point. So we really almost need to do a zero-based budgeting type exercise of what do we really need to make sure that any future TLDs are accessible to all communities and not necessarily patterned exactly on what was done in the JAS proposal. That was cobbled together quickly and very, very late, and there were all sorts of problems known with it at the time, even though we hope the success rate would be much higher than it ultimately was. So I think we almost have to go back to basics and not rely on that too much, but we can't ignore what was done either. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. It's Christopher for the record again. Actually, I think you raised a really great point, and I think you can tie it into the global report where there's a lot of, I forget the numbers, but there was a couple of points brought up that they just didn't have the information that they needed. And I think if you tie it in, you know, here's the the fees going forward? Here's your budget kind of going forward based on different levels or different kind of plug-and-play modules for a GTL or for a TLD. It might provide that kind of information that would be helpful. But it still, we still need to get past that first hurdle with the GAC in saying, you know, it needs to make sense. In order for it to be successful, there's going to be an argument for it that makes sense. So figuring out what that middle ground is where it will make sense is, I think, the key aspect. Sorry, Steve, I see you have your hand raised.
Thanks, Krista. This is Steve from staff. And I'll plead ignorance in the JAS report, but what I wanted to say is that it might help to reevaluate what the, I guess, the goals of the program are, and also, I guess, what this sort of translates in what determines what success might be. And this might be useful for a number of topics besides just this one, but to have a clear understanding of what represents success. And so I guess this is just triggered by the previous slide where it said, you know, the program was considered a failure. And so it might be helpful for this group to help determine what they think success would look like. And I'll put that in the context of that the bullet on the screen that's up right now, or on the slide that's on right now, about the cart before the horse. So for instance, you could have a program that this working group designs that is quote-unquote perfect, but folks in the region might not take uptake usage of the program if it just isn't right for them. So just a couple thoughts. Thanks.
Great. Thanks. Does it have, so initially I think, you know, the what we had written down was to evaluate the accuracy of cost estimates and or review the methodology to develop the cost model. We're still adhering to, my apologies, I'm reading off the wrong sheet. Going back to Steve's comment of what does success look like and how do we differentiate that and develop that? And if anyone has any comments or feedback, that would be great. Okay. Maybe I'll put that on the back burner for now, and we can develop those thoughts more going forward. So moving along. Sarah, do you want to, should we go to the clarity of the application process or any other more comments?
Yeah, I think we could probably move ahead if you're ready. So we did have some discussions regarding the accreditation program when we were in ICANN. We're still collecting information from that. There was a separate session that was held by Francisco regarding a potential accreditation program, and we're still gathering information from that, and so we will have updates for that regarding that at a future meeting, and to keep with our timeline up for our scheduled topics, we're going to move on to the clarity of application process and see if we can possibly even touch on some topics of fees. So I'm not sure if anyone was able to do a little bit of reading prior to the meeting. But regarding the clarity of application process, reading through the final report, it appeared that it was generally felt that the application guidebook was the proper vehicle for implementing recommendations, but that a degree of transparency was lost during implementation of the operational processes and procedures. This appears to have been due to a relatively short period to finalize the operational requirements. It was about 7 months, and the number of applicants that applied once the application process opened. And so the question that's been put forward for us to consider is how can the application process avoid developing processes on an as-needed basis regarding clarity of question process, change request process, customer support. So based on prior experience, does anyone from this group have any suggestions or guidance they could provide regarding the process as far as clarifying questions, change requests, customer support, applicant prioritization, or other areas? I'm not sure if anyone has any strong feelings. This is something that we need to look at. Do you think even though it was on an at-need basis that it just sort of worked? Another thing would be to consider, you know, how the impact that is on, has on ICANN staff and their resources. So I'll open to see if anyone has any comments on this. Donna, if you have your hand up, please.
Thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin from NewStar. I guess, you know, just from a personal perspective, I think the reality is that these processes got better over time as ICANN rolled them out and got a little bit more comfortable with what they were doing. I think the change requests were probably too opaque, so maybe that's something we could look at. In terms of, you know, perhaps what we think, what improvements could be made. I think customer support got better over time. Application prioritization in the end became largely irrelevant because of other stops and starts within the process as, you know, things like name collision came up. And I think there were some other issues as well. So the application prioritization, I think the draw itself was reasonably successful, but I don't know that it had overwhelming relevance at the end of the day. So maybe that's something that we could potentially look at as well. I would note that, you know, ICANN did a fair amount of work on this, on reviewing their processes, and have documented that, so maybe we could use that as a starting point to look at, you know, where from ICANN's perspective they think they can make changes that would improve efficiencies. So maybe we could use that as a starting point. Thanks, Sarah.
Yes, Jeff. Please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I think one of the recommendations we can make is, I'm not sure if everyone recalls that participated, but ICANN had developed this, I think they called it knowledge base, or I can't remember what they called the questions, but anytime a question was submitted that had general applicability, ICANN then documented the question and the answer. But it was almost impossible to find and search through that database. One of the things I think that ICANN could do or that we should recommend is taking that knowledge database and organizing it in such a manner as to serve as a user-friendly FAQ-type database. So improve that, the readability and searchability of that knowledge base, plus make sure that we capture for the applicant guidebook any of the clarifications that were made through those knowledge base questions to make sure that we don't have such ambiguity around the wording in the guidebook. And I know Kurt's on this call, so he may remember it better than I do, but there was just, it was impossible to get support when they just told you to go refer to the knowledge base and then you had to dig in, and it was really difficult to find the answer to the question that you had. That's one thing I think we could do. The other is that we really do not have good insight into any of the clarifying questions that were asked. I mean, if we worked for
an application, an RFP, or for a registry that applied, yes, we do. But I mean, the public at large does not have any record of what the clarifying questions that were asked were. So we need to bring those out into the open without revealing any specific flaw or question that was asked for a specific applicant. But there were a lot of general questions that were asked over and over again. And so I think we should try to gather a list of those. The third thing I would recommend, and I'm starting to lose it here, is that, there should be a way, and an accreditation or certification of an RSP may solve some of this, but to the extent that an applicant or an RSP got a question, it got a question, the same question for every single application it supported. So for an RSP-related question, if you were a new star, you got 350-something, the same question 350 times. If you're donuts as well, you got your question over 300 times if it related to a business or financial question or one of their back-end questions. So to the extent we could devise a process whereby a registry could answer a question once and have that apply to all of its applications, or an RFP replies for all the applications it supports, I think that would dramatically improve the process. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. That's great feedback. And I see that we have a couple of comments from Rubens as well in the chat. He writes, AGB is a mixture of how-tos and whys. A simplified how-to-only version would be easier to digest. The whys are only needed. Changes to the applicant guidebook or new processes are needed. And then he also commented that CQs and answers for published responses should have been published. So thank you, Rubens, for that input as well. And Donna writes, the clarifying questions could also indicate the question was ambiguous and in that regard, the question should be reviewed to remove ambiguity or other problems. Okay, great. I think that gives us a good starting point of items that we should review and consider for the application process. Everyone's comfortable with what we have so far for this. We can move on to the next topic.
Just one other item to add to the feedback, which I thought was really great, is I was often sending various emails to various different contacts. So perhaps a very clear method of figuring out who to contact for what and what system to use would also be really helpful. Oh, sorry, go ahead. I just wanted to make sure that was captured before I forgot. And I see Russ has his hand up.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, this is Russ Weinstein from staff. I believe to Jeff's point about CQs and not clear explanation of what the CQs, each of the CQs were to the various applicants. I believe in the report that we published regarding the program review report, I believe we identified which questions got CQs, and I thought we also identified what the themes of the CQs were, but I don't have the report in front of me. I was trying to find it so I could reference it before I got on the mic, but I recommend taking another look at that, and I'll do the same. And that might be a good place to help provide that. That's all.
Thanks, Russ. I think Steve has added a link in the chat. And Donna notes it's on page 52 of the report.
Okay, great. Yes, Russ, thank you for that. And I see your hand is still up. Is that a new or old hand?
Old hand, sorry.
Old hand. Okay. Just want to make sure you didn't have anything more to say. And so moving on to our next slide. Another topic or two topics that we had to discuss are the application fees and the variable fees. And so from the final report, it notes that, or the question that's sort of been put forward to us is to evaluate accuracy of cost estimates and or review the methodology to develop cost models while still adhering to principle of cost recovery. How can payment process be improved? And so some of the items would be to see how well cost estimates compared to actual costs incurred by staff. I have put in an inquiry to staff regarding some of these numbers, and that is something that is in the works of putting those numbers together. So perhaps by our next meeting, I will have a little something more concrete that we can look at as far as cost and how that panned out. And then depending on the results, we can consider if we want to provide implementation guidance to help the community develop the cost methodology or subsequent procedures. Significant changes to the program stemming from policy development, operational changes, or other channels would need to be properly accounted for with a new costing methodology. So that seems pretty straightforward. We'll probably be able to have a more productive discussion once we have some numbers in front of us, but to the extent that someone may have thoughts or comments or ideas regarding this that you'd like to get on the record, please go ahead. If you'd like to comment on application fees. Okay, seeing none. The other item for our consideration is variable fees. And should the new GTLD application fee be variable based on such factors as application type, open or closed registry, multiple identical applications, and other factors. And so it was noted in the final report that the application fee should remain dependent upon the principle of cost recovery as opposed to generating excess revenue. And this was recommended in the implementation guideline B. And guideline B supports the concept of differing application fees based on the applicant. And so finally, let me see a comment from Donna regarding application fees based on cost recovery is difficult to do if you do not understand the demand, which is evidenced from the 2012 rounds. Yes, that's an excellent point. I see a few more people typing.
Sarah, one thing that could be perhaps helpful for us is to actually get some documentation around what the results were from the 2012 round, i.e. what was the total cost recovery expected versus actual. And I think I've searched for that, but I've never actually found it. So that could help us answer that question going forward.
Yeah, I was chatting with staff about that earlier, and there is some information regarding it, but I don't think it's been finalized, and so hopefully we can at least get some sort of in the future or something for us to look at and consider. Maybe by the next meeting or the one after that, which will help our deliberations. And I'm just seeing if there's any more comments. We have a comment from Russ regarding the report that he referenced, that page 52 that Donna pointed to was the high level, page 79, had further details regarding CQ from the technical panel. Thank you for that information, Russ.
Right, Steve has his hand up.
Oh, Steve, wonderful. Go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Chris. So this is Steve again from staff. And I just wanted to reference the report that Russ and Don have mentioned, the program reviews. Within that report, there's actually I know you said you'll prepare some more detailed numbers, but I wanted to also provide this as a resource for the work track. Within that report, there's a section on financial management. It's page 183. Within there, you can see a little bit of an analysis that the ICANN staff did on the topic. Also within that section, you'll find links to the fiscal year operating budget, some of which actually has some analysis on the forecast costs versus actual costs and sort of the evolving cost models that were developed over the years. So acknowledging that Kristen and Sarah are going to do some additional research, if some of the members would like to do some of their own research, they can also start there as a starting point. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Steve. And Donna, I see you have your hand raised.
Thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin. I wonder if whether there might be some value in having a conversation around the fact that the application fee for 2012 was $185,000. If it's, 2018 by the time we have another round, and yes, I know I'm being ambitious here, but that's 6 years down the, 6 years away from 2012, do we use the $185,000 as a basis for, what the next fee should be if it's not, if we don't do it on a cost recovery model? So I just wonder whether it's worth having a conversation around the fact that the 2012 round was $185,000. Was that a reasonable fee, setting aside the fact that it was not, because demand was much higher, the $185,000 probably wasn't the correct amount if we do it on a cost recovery basis, but is $185,000 still a reasonable fee? I think there would be some value in just having that conversation as well as part of this discussion. Thanks.
Hi, it's Crystal for the record. I totally agree with you, and I think there should be a fair amount of excess in there, too. And I think once we have some time to review all the numbers there, we can hopefully provide some high-level insight into what that looks like for some future discussions.
This is Sarah Bakke, and I see Aubrey has made a comment in the chat as well. Or even if we stay with a cost recovery model, the model selected was quite controversial at the time. So, and Krista, I think you had a slide in here with you as well. I didn't know if you wanted to speak to that.
I think it's perhaps repeating a little bit of what we had, or just more questions, to bring up, i.e., on the application fees to evaluate the accuracy of the cost estimate, to review the methodology to develop the cost model. So kind of going where we've already gone with, does it make sense? And we're still adhering to the principle of cost recovery. How can we examine the payment process going forward? And I think in one of the documents, there was a specific note that there was a lack of invoices, which was a challenge to some applicants. So that should be something we consider or perhaps discuss in the future. Seems like a minor item, but it was noted.
And secondly, the variable fees. Should the new GTLD application fees be variable based on such factors such as application type, multiple identical applications, or other factors? So really just a repeat, so I think we're good to keep going forward unless anyone has a comment to finalize this topic.
Okay. This is Sarah Bach again, seeing no hands and nothing being written in the chat. I do note that we are about 5 minutes from the top of the hour, so instead of starting on anything new, I will throw it out there for any others. Does anyone have any other items that they would like to discuss, anything from ICANN 57 that they heard or would like to mention, or I'll open the floor for any kind of comments? See, Rubens is typing. He says, Rubens states that I support cost recovery. A few more people typing.
Just maybe for food for thought for the next couple weeks. We have two topics that we have coming up that the timeline's fairly quick on. One of them is the application submission period and queuing. And we should all give some thought on whether first come, first served is still relevant, and if not, whether there's a better mechanism. And secondly, the application submission period. I know there was a lot of comments on it was too quick or it was too short. And, you know, is the question, is 3 months the proper amount of time? And additionally, what is the time frame between when we say around, let's call it around, or a door opens, and or when it's announced to when the door opens? And what would that timeline look like? So there was lots of feedback saying it wasn't enough time, and then how do we ramp up to make sure that it makes sense? And finally, is the concept of a fixed period of time for accepting applications the right approach? And I know that's been touched on in other areas, but just something to think on. I see comments.
This is Sarah Bakke again. Yeah, there's a continued discussion going on in the chat regarding cost recovery. And Donna made the comment that even if that means $5,000 an application, and Ruben said even in this case, Donna did not agree, and there's some additional typing going on, so having a nice debate about application costs in the chat at the moment. Anyone else has any more information? I see we're pushing the top of the hour, so we can probably wrap this up once everyone is done typing. Okay, I think we're good. Krista, do you have anything else?
No, I'm good. I just want to capture Donna's last comment, though, because I think it's we should catch up next time. It's a unique piece of real estate on the Internet has a value, and I think that needs to be part of the discussion. And I agree with you, Donna, that, you know, if the variable costs are $5,000, is it fair to the prior ones for $185,000 versus $5,000 now? And having a discussion on that to make sure there's some kind of thoughts around it would be appropriate. But that's all I have, so I'm good, Sarah, if you are.
Okay, great. I want to thank everyone for joining us today and for your contributions and input. It's very much appreciated. And I think we can bring this to a close and recording. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining.
Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.